These words are by Gretchen Haley. Every little thing that breaks your heart is welcome here. We'll make a space for it, give it its due time, and praise for the wanting it represents, the longing for something more, some healing hope that remains not yet. We promise no magic, no making it all better, but offer only this circle of trust, this human community that remembers, though imperfectly, that sings and prays, though sometimes awkwardly, this gathering that loves, though not yet enough. We're still practicing, after all, still learning, still in need of help and partners, still becoming able to receive all this beauty and all these gifts we bring each other. Come, let us worship together. Our chalice lighting words are by Nadine McSpadden. And would somebody like to, thank you, light our chalice this morning. During our darkest moments, still there is light. When facing our biggest challenges, still there is light. When we can't see the way out, still there is light. When all we can do is help to hold someone's hand, still there is light. For ourselves and for one another, still there is light. We are the light. Our words for your personal prayer or meditation this morning are a poem by Derek Walcott. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, "Sit here, eat." You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit, feast on your life. Please turn now to number 637 in your hymnals and join me in this responsive reading. I'm going to read all the parts, but you please join me in the italics. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time we have struck out in anger without just cause, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For the selfishness which sets us apart and alone, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For losing sight of our unity, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. This is a story from the Jewish tradition titled Last Minute Redemption. On the eve of Yom Kippur, Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik of Brisk was told that a congregant had gone bankrupt and was being held in the debtor's prison until he would pay 5,000 rubles. That evening, when the prayer of atonement was to be said, Rabbi Soloveitchik addressed the congregation, "Jews, compassionate children of compassionate parents, I have decided that the prayer of atonement will not be said until our congregants will pledge to provide 5,000 rubles so we can liberate our bankrupt fellow congregant from prison right after Yom Kippur. Only after the 5,000 rubles were collected did Rabbi Soloveitchik permit the saying of Kol Nidre. Thus ends the story. So our offering will not literally liberate people from prison, will it? Wait a minute. Maybe our offering will literally liberate people from prison this month. Here to tell you more is Liz Garrigan-Byerly, who will be followed by our interim music or choir director, Ken Langer, who will tell you a bit about today's piece.
Thank you, Cindy. It's so good to be here with you today. I have had the privilege of meeting some of your members in the last few months through the Metro West Immigrant Solidarity Network, and I know you to be a congregation committed to justice. I know this congregation has over 20 people who have already become part of your asylum-seeking ministry. If you're here today, would you stand so others can to know what your faces look like and can reach out to you? Thank you. On January 26, 2017, a young man in Framingham went out in the early morning hours to warm up his truck so that his coworkers would be warm on their way to a job. Once outside, he was discovered by ICE agents who had come to detain him. And not only did they detain him, but they took his car keys and used it to enter his house where they detained other relatives against the law. That began a movement in Framingham in the Metro West area of allies who were deeply concerned about this immoral action and who came together, people of interfaith, faith communities, civic groups, and individuals who were concerned. And we began to work together to be a bulwark against the oppression that our immigrant neighbors were facing. We began to accompany people to district court so they could participate in the judicial process without being taken by ICE agents. We began to provide emotional and financial support to families when a family member was detained. One father of three who owned his own roofing company was detained for 10 months, and we provided accompaniment throughout that process, helping the family pay the rent, phone bills, helping their daughter find a therapist. On June 24th of 2018, last summer, our work together took a dramatic turn. We had all known for a while that family separation was happening at the border, but it seemed so far removed from what we were doing here in Massachusetts. And then we received a call that a mother whose daughter was still in detention, who had been released to a family friend here in Framingham, was not safe in that home. And she needed shelter, she needed a home, she needed a bed. And so my family opened our doors to her, and thus began our 10-day intense journey with Angelica to be reunited with her daughter, Sandy. We made our way through the maze of a federal bureaucracy that was in chaos, not knowing how to interpret policies and court orders, how to care for children separated from their families, and how to reunite them. On July 5th, that date seems so significant. One day after Independence Day, Sandy came home, to a new home, into her mother's arms. They were reunited at the Logan Airport. And Sandy, who is this exuberant, vibrant child, stood stone-faced, arms down, as her mother put her arms around her, weeping. The trauma had been so significant. She had spent her 8th birthday in detention, not knowing if she would ever see her mom again. By that evening, she and my own daughter were running around our backyard giggling, but their healing continues. That set in motion our network's support of 5 other families that were reunited that summer, and since that time, we have begun to support 20 other families for everything from housing and food, registering for school and insurance, medical insurance, providing bonds to literally release people from detention. It takes a lot of resources. In the last calendar year, we have raised and distributed over $70,000. And our volunteers, this is a very conservative estimate, have provided 1,500 hours of support. And every bit of it has come with heart and soul, which I think is the most important piece. We had no idea what we were getting into when each time we said yes. But we knew at some level that our liberation was tied to their liberation and theirs to ours. And even as the prisons keep being built, we are finding liberation together. Now, the federal government has essentially closed the southern border, and so the trickle of asylum-seeking families is shrinking. But that doesn't mean that your passion for asylum-seeking families needs to come to a stop to eat, too. Because really, all immigrants are seeking asylum. Not by the way our government legally defines that term, but by our broader understanding. People who are leaving one place to seek protection in another. These are people fleeing one prison only to find themselves placed in another here, whether that is literal detention at the border or the prison that gets built around them on the restrictions that they face once they are released. And so our work continues. We do not always know what it will look like the next day, but we continue to provide financial and emotional support to people, a community that will hold them when they fall. At one of our last community gatherings, an immigrant neighbor said, "No one leaves their country unless they have to." These are people who have not been imprisoned because of their own bankruptcy, but because of our moral bankruptcy as a nation. And it is liberating, even in the face of the deep oppression and persecution they face, to be one small chink in the breaking of their chains of bondage. So we are so grateful to have you become a part of our network, and we are grateful for your support. I look forward to talking with you after worship and coffee hour. Thank you.
So this is the Days of Awe, the High Holy Week in Judaism that falls between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur will begin on the evening of Tuesday at sundown. And Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement. And so I wanted to talk to you today about how it is that we practice atonement in a Unitarian Universalist context, how sometimes we're not so good at it, how we might get better. And I want to begin personally, because it's not fair for me to say, hey, you all need to get better at atonement, without modeling this myself. And I have plenty to atone for in my life. I know in particular, this year, I've been under a lot of stress. And then when I'm under stress, I get forgetful, and I miss things. And when things get busy, I do the same, and we've had a very busy fall. So what I need to atone for mostly in this context is breaking relationship, of not being there and filling opportunities that were there for me when you might have been reaching out to me, and I missed that. And I do that time and again. And for this, I am deeply sorry. And I offer my apologies, and I beg for your forgiveness. As a faith, we do the same thing. As an institution, we do the same thing. We often get so busy in our hustle and bustle and so focused on our individual lives and our needs and our interests that we miss connections being broken with other people. And usually those are not things that are done out of ill intentions. I believe everyone here has good intentions, but we miss opportunities. We break relationships. And we need to understand that the impact of those incidents is greater than our good intentions, and reach out when we have had negative impacts and ask people if they can forgive us and we can begin again in love. So by way of some examples of this, I want to offer up a few examples of things that have happened in our denomination at large. So most recently, a minister in our denomination broke the code of ethics. And he resigned his fellowship. This happened about a week and a half ago, and a letter went out to all ministers. In the letter that he wrote to all the ministers, he expressed his regret and said that he hoped that there was some way he could repair relationship and begin again in love. I don't know yet what will become of that story. What I do know is that there are times when it's possible, And that we need to look for more ways to make that possible as a faith, because we aren't good at knowing how to rebuild and repair relationship, I think. And this goes back to the fact that largely Unitarian Universalists are come-outers, as we call them. We are not homegrown UUs, by and large. How many people here came from a different faith first in their... Right, the vast majority, right? So you left another religion. And I'm glad you did, because that brought you here. And I'm glad you're here with us. And I'm glad you have found this to be your religious home. And especially in Domestic Violence Month, I want to recognize that there are relationships we need to leave sometimes. There are good reasons to get out of bad relationships. And sometimes churches can do spiritual violence, right? And particularly in those cases, I applaud people exiting those situations. But where that leaves us as a people is we are a people who have practice at leaving. And we don't have as much practice as a people at staying. And so here are some examples of that. A few years ago, our congregational life staff department head at the UUA made a hiring decision to hire someone into the congregational life staff of the southern region. And he passed over a person who wrote a blog post about it, naming that she was told she wasn't a good fit, and that she counted this as the fact that she was female, she was Latina, and she was a religious educator and not a minister. And she felt that our faith is sometimes racist, sometimes sexist, and sometimes gives primacy to ministers over religious educators. All quite very possibly, and perhaps probably, true. Our denominational president wrote a response to this. Some of his response was good. All of his response was well-intentioned. But in his response, he called the response of people to him hysterical. It was a poor choice of words. Can anyone tell me why hysterical is a really particularly poor choice of a word? You're laughing. Huh? It's a word generally given to women because its root word is hysteria. Womb. The root word of hysteria is womb, uterus. And so it's a word used to label women as overly emotional and to not deny them agency in its core, in its history. He didn't mean that. He didn't mean to choose a sexist word to describe a situation where he was being told it was a sexist situation, but it was a bad choice. And the firestorm erupted in response. And unfortunately, what our UUA president chose to do in this media frenzy that erupted around him was he chose to resign, take his severance, and leave. And the congregational life staff director did the same thing, resigned, took severance, and left. And the third official at the UUA did the same thing, resigned, took their severance, and left. So we didn't get to have that experience of atonement, that experience of coming back and expressing sorrow and rebuilding the relationship with the people it had been broken with. And in that firestorm, the director of the department or of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association did the same thing. He wrote a letter expressing his anger about the whole situation. He was good friends with the UUA president. They'd gone to seminary together. And people responded. They were angry at him for writing this letter. And he resigned and left. And again, we had no models for atonement. No models of how do we rebuild relationship. This summer, another incident happened wherein a UU minister, a minister of the church in which General Assembly, the town General Assembly was being held in, minister of that church, he wrote a book. And he wrote a book rehashing these other incidents and basically saying that that Latina religious educator was probably not the best person for the job, essentially, that there was no system of racism or sexism or preferencing of ministers at the UUA. And it erupted a firestorm around him. And the UU Ministers Association wrote a letter, a very rare thing that they did, which is wrote a letter of censure, saying that his words were harmful, and inviting him to come back into relationship, inviting him into a process of modeling how we do atonement, how we do restoration in this faith,
how we hold ourselves accountable to the people we've hurt. I don't know yet whether he will step into that space and take up that offer to build community again and build atonement. I do know there is one good example I can offer you in our larger association of where restitution, reparations, atonement has happened, and in a good way. Many of you will have read the article that came out in the UU World last spring called After L, G, and B. It was an article about transgender individuals, and it was written by a cisgender, that is to say, non-transgender person. And the article was very well-intentioned. The woman who wrote it wanted to talk about how she had learned, and she now did better than she once did on this issue. But the article was hurtful to transgender UUs. It was hurtful for two reasons, primarily. One, it had some basic errors in it that were harmful. And two, this was the first time our denominational magazine had written a feature article about transgender UUs, about transgender people, and it did not feature transgender UUs at its core. It did not lift up their voices and their stories. It centered on the story of a cisgender person and their struggles with transgender people. So that was harmful. And they let the UU World know it. But to their credit, the UU World editors did the following. First, they issued an immediate apology. They said, "We hear that we've hurt people. We are studying this, and we will get back to you soon with more information." And then they did that. They met with transgender UUs, they had a listening circle of information, and they learned. And they decided to do some things deeply differently in the future. First, they said, "We will focus in our next issue on raising up transgender UU voices." And they did that. It was a good issue. Had some good articles, raised up different people's voices that we hadn't seen raised up in our association before. And then they said, "We're going to do better as an institution. We're not going to just do copy editing like every other publication does. We're going to have specific editing where people look at things in the writing process with an eye to harm, with an eye to what could wound people. Because we're an institution of ethics, and an institution that has values, and an institution that wants to raise itself up higher than it's been before in our relationship and our accountability." And so they put into practice this level of editing that they'd never had before that would specifically look for, is this article doing any harm to anyone? That's a new thing. And there's more that they did too. This is just a couple examples of it. But it was a great example, and I think the best thing we've seen in our association in a long time. We've had too many patterns of people showing how you can walk away after you've done harm, and not enough of people showing what you do when you come to the table and you say, "I'm sorry. I hurt you. I will do better next time." And so I don't know how we always do this, because every incident is separate. Every example is different. But I do know that we as a people need to live into the principles which call us into relationship, which call us into accountability with one another, which lift up inherent worth and dignity and our relationship with one another, and say, "Please forgive me, and I forgive you. And we begin again in love." May it be so. So, please rise and join. Well, let me say some closing words. And then we'll rise and join in our closing song. This is the time. This is the place. This is the one wild and precious life that it has given to us. And we are the people. This faith is here for us to take out into the world. May we do so with love. May we begin again in love. Blessed be. Amen.